Welcome back to Stephen Ministry Training. Today we're going to talk about the topic of people who are grieving and how Stephen Ministry responds and relates to that kind of trial in a person's life. So we're on Module 12. The title is Ministering to Those Experiencing Grief. We have three modules coming up. This is the first that get into some difficult but very essential areas. Ministering to grieving people is major for Stephen Ministry. It's understandable because it affects all of us at some point in our life. And it is an appropriate, very appropriate experience that someone might have who would then benefit from having a Stephen Minister. Following this topic, next week we'll be talking about ministering to people experiencing depression, and that is followed by another module which will take a look at how to ensure that people who are suicidal receive the best possible care. Let's get started. Some people believe that if we as Christians believe in God, we shouldn't grieve at the loss of a loved one. That's not true. It's just simply not true. Real Christians really can grieve. Page 269 in your book, you'll notice that that is the name of the devotion for today. It's perfectly natural. It's even necessary for Christians to grieve, as it is for anyone to grieve the loss of a loved one. Grieving has nothing to do with weak faith. It means we're human. In GriefShare, that is a group support group that we offer here at the church, but in GriefShare, we say that we grieve because we love, and it's very true. It holds true in the area of Stephen Ministry Care as well. So, now we're going to read a story adapted from the Gospel of John that illustrates the point. In our class, everyone takes a role. There's a narrator, there's Mary and Martha, and there's Jesus. So we know what the situation was. It was the death of Lazarus. The script you'll find on page 269 in your book, Focus Note 1, I recommend you read through it. Jesus wept. He showed very deep emotions and feelings of grief, and he did so publicly. His feelings were natural, they were normal, given the circumstances and given his humanity side. If Jesus could weep, it's certainly okay for us to do the same. Also, he cared for Martha and Mary in their grief. See, we have to remember that they were both trying to make sense of the loss of Lazarus. And they were a little upset with Jesus because he wasn't there in time to save their brother. Well, there was a reason for that. May God be glorified. Jesus had it all figured out. But nonetheless, as a human, they saw it as something which was unfortunate. They were hoping that he didn't and would not die if Jesus had been there. And so were so inclined, he wouldn't have, but he had a purpose. So Jesus listened to Martha and Mary's expression of painful feelings, and he responded by sharing his good news with them. There's a prophecy, my favorite prophet and most incredible prophet of the Old Testament, Isaiah. In Isaiah 53, verse 3b, he describes Jesus as, quote, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. Jesus showed us what it means to live as a child of God. And as Christians, we can do no better than to follow his example. So, we grieve when we suffer loss, and we care for others who are going through grief. Now let's please pray. Lord Jesus, you're a person of sorrows, well acquainted with grief. More than that, you are the one who has borne our grief and sorrows. When we suffer losses, help us to remember you're with us, carrying our sorrows. Fill us with your compassion so we can carry your comfort to others who grieve, helping them to know that you're with them. Thank you for sharing our burden and making it possible for us to bear. Amen. Okay, we're going to look at three quick points about the grieving process. And this is now on page 270 in your book. We said that grief is normal, natural, and necessary. I think sometimes too often people think that grief is unnatural and something to be avoided. No one likes to see someone going through that kind of pain. We really have to cover it up. But that's not a healthy way to look at grief. In your grief, and you will recall from your pre-class reading, you learned that grief is very normal, very natural, and very necessary. Normal because at different times in life we all experience it. Natural because grief is the very human process of adjusting emotionally and socially to a loss. So it's emotional and social loss, to loss that we are looking at in grief. And necessary because if we try to avoid grief and bury difficult feelings, it leads to problems in the future. Remember the pot that was exploding on the stove. Another image from Stephen Ministry, the melting pot. If you let that kind of pressure of unreleased emotions build up, they will get out. And when they do, it can really cause problems. Very unexpectedly, and it could be very much into the future. So, from a Stephen Minister standpoint, we need to be accepting of the grief in ourselves that we've been through and or in others. The more comfortable we are with our own grief, the better we can accept other people's grief and effectively care for them. Christians can and should grieve. Point number two. Sometimes Christians feel they should hide any negative feelings and present an image of strength, quote unquote, as if grieving were a sin or a sign they lacked faith or was a weakness. Again, nothing could be farther from the truth. God gave us feelings. Remember our feelings in our earlier module? Positive, negative feelings, they're all a gift from God. All our feelings play a role in our lives. So we should fully share our emotions with a person we can trust. And for example, in, of course, our situation here, you as a Stephen minister can be that person because we open the door for Christ to bring hope and healing. Third point, caregivers need to focus on the grieving person's frame of reference. Okay, very, very important. To effectively care for someone who's grieving, we have to, and we need to, focus on their frame of reference, not our own. Always try to see the situation from the perspective of the other person rather than primarily from our own perspective. And that's really good advice for any kind of situation we are ministering to in Stephen Ministry. We always should be looking at what the person's going through and what their view of things is, rather than our own. So, that means for a Stephen minister to minister effectively in the area of grief, you need to be in touch with your own feelings. Because caring for a grieving person can sometimes stir up our own past feelings of grief and loss, some of which may be unresolved. Stephen ministers can't be caught up in their own grief, so that it is a struggle to focus on their care receivers. And that's the problem, potentially. It's not always a problem, and it can be remedied and aided, but it could be a problem if ignored. Let me be specific. For example, suppose the Stephen minister is caring for a care receiver that lost a spouse, okay? But the Stephen minister has also lost a spouse and really hasn't worked through that loss. It's possible that that Stephen minister is going to find it really difficult to perceive and respond to the feelings their care receiver is experiencing. Also, a Stephen minister who's felt a lot of guilt, let's say they felt a lot of guilt in connection with the grief experience, they might assume that their care receiver also is feeling guilty about their loss, but that could be entirely incorrect because their care receiver's experience could be altogether different from their own. So, bottom line, the Stephen minister should not project their own feelings onto their care receiver. Focus on what the care receiver is actually thinking and feeling, and hopefully you're going to help them to get those feelings out so you know what they are, and it helps that person to heal. Okay. A couple of discussion questions we go over in the class. What are reasons grieving people may feel uncomfortable expressing their grief? And then what are ways Stephen ministers can help grieving people feel more comfortable expressing their grief? Well, why might grieving people feel uncomfortable expressing their grief? Well, there's a few possible reasons. Certainly, grief stirs up a lot of painful feelings. They may not know how to express them. They might be worried about what other people think of them. And they may have, you know, other people may negatively respond to how they're feeling. Sometimes others want you to move quickly through your grief, which is not always helpful. Sometimes people even respond to grieving people with platitudes or cliches or other hurtful words. They don't look forward to that either. Also, what are ways a Stephen minister can help grieving people feel more comfortable expressing their grief? Some of the things that should come to mind would be to reassure them that it's very normal and natural and necessary to grieve. We should be listening, very accepting, non-judgmental. Remind your care receiver of your commitment to confidentiality, very, very important in this case. And validate what they say about their thoughts and feelings. So these are all good things that we can do. We talk to them also at the right time and in the right circumstance about how people in the Bible express their grief. Maybe starting with the Psalms. Again, it needs to be appropriately timed to share that kind of information, but it could certainly be helpful. Let's move a little forward now. Applying key caring concepts to grief. Okay, we've talked about some very good concepts of how to care in Stephen ministry training. And grieving is certainly a good fit to use to apply those concepts. Applying key caring concepts to grief. Okay, let's look at that. The training you've had so far has taught you what you need to know and how to care for someone who's going through other problems and also grieving. We're going to review a few of the concepts, starting with the safe house. The safe house is an image on page 271 in your workbook. And we covered that concept in module 2. And we ask, you know, we discuss a little bit how the safe house applies to someone who's grieving. Honestly, it's no different than other things people go through that are not grief-related, but in order to be able to express feelings, whatever the topic is, the Stephen minister has to create a safe environment. And so we have the image of the safe house, built on grace-based acceptance, empathy, the walls are empathy and listening skills, confidentiality covers over all of this environment, if you will, that you have created for free expression of your care receiver's feelings. And then there's the door to all of it, which is trust. And hopefully you will develop a trust level with your care receiver so they can open up and benefit from that healing. All applies to the grieving person. 272 shows you another image very familiar to you, the mud hole. Well, how does the mud hole, also from Module 2, by the way, tie into someone who's grieving? Well, again, we look at the different images. Sympathy, over-identification, care receiver, and then empathy. We know if someone is being ministered to by a Stephen minister, sympathy is inadequate. Sympathy keeps the expression of compassion at a distance. We are empathetic. We get up close and we express true compassion to that person and caring. We have the image of the over-identification, where the Stephen minister gets down in the hole with no way to get out with that care receiver, so they're really not very helpful to them. And then we have the right approach, the empathetic approach. The Stephen minister gets down somewhat into the same mud hole, if you will, but it's holding on to the root of the tree, which is Christ, and at the same time expressing true concern and empathy to that person. Again, perfect fit for people who are grieving, perfect image, perfect situation that applies as well to someone grieving the loss of a loved one as it might to other losses or other problems that people experience in life. Okay, so let's see. Focusing on the process of caring. All right, that's the next step. It's on page 272. There's some room to take notes. In Module 5, we discuss the process of caring. It is a process. Well, how would it relate to grieving? Well, in a lot of different ways. Examples of a focus on results would be, you know, trying to rush the person through grief, cheer them up, offer quick fixes. Mainly people do that because they're not comfortable with seeing someone go through grief. But it's very ineffective in terms of helping that grieving person to heal. Now, a Stephen minister should focus on the process of caring and listening and reflecting and validating and empathizing. It's not that results aren't important, but the Stephen minister doesn't want the results of the care receiver moving through grief and experiencing God's healing. The only way to get those results, they want that, but they're not going to move through that whole thing and get the end result unless they encourage their care receiver to focus on the process and trust God to provide healing. Okay. I put a slide up at some point. It isn't in your book. An image of focusing on the process of caring, where you see the little plant that was planted from a seed. So we're the caregivers, God's the caregiver. You as a Stephen minister can water that plant, make it grow. But the healing, the growing process itself is left to God. That healing will be His, and He will cure your care receiver. Another concept to look at, very important and applies definitely to the grieving person, the course of a crisis. That was in Module 8, not that long ago. We looked at what happens to a person when something very major happens in their life. And if you look at that image on page 273, you'll remember the precipitating event occurs. And there's a lot of stress and anxiety. And that would be a good time for a Stephen minister to be assigned to someone. Let's say that in this case, the stress is over a sudden death. The person has a couple of directions they can go in. As they work through this very difficult time, they can head towards greater wholeness or greater brokenness. So we get into a discussion in class. What could cause a grieving person to move towards greater brokenness or wholeness? Well, let's look at the brokenness. Person can get stuck in denial. Denial initially for a short time is very healthy. There's nothing wrong with that. It protects the person from the shock, some of the shock of what's happened. A person could try to work through, well, I didn't complete the thought, but if denial goes on for weeks and weeks, it's not healthy. The person is stuck in their grief and they need help. A person could work through their loss alone or try or prefer to. Not recognizing that going through that kind of a problem, that kind of an event in their life, they really need others who will be with them and listen to them and pray with them and care for them. But they push it away and want to do this on their own, which is a very risky way to handle it. A person could turn to alcohol or substance abuse, trying to escape that emotional pain. It's better to numb it. It's too hard to take it. And a person could get stuck in sadness or depression. We're going to talk more about that next week, this, the depression part, which can be very difficult to work out of. Not impossible, but very difficult. So how could a person who's grieving take some actions or how, working towards greater wholeness? Well, after a certain amount of time, reasonable amount of time, the person admits, they accept the finality of the fact that they've lost a very special person in their life. And they recognize they have to find a new normal, which involves going through the grief journey and making necessary changes. A person could find others, including a Stephen minister, who will walk that journey with them and help them to rebuild their lives. A person could eventually look to find new relationships or interests, something to help them rebuild their life. And very important, a person could examine their relationship with God and see ways to build or strengthen that relationship. Okay, so you see how a lot of the skills we learn are very relevant for someone going through the grief process. Our own grief experiences, page 274 at the top. Everyone suffers losses in grief. How we react may be different, but everyone suffers them sooner or later. As a Stephen minister, your own grief history can be a source of understanding for your caregiving. You also need to be sure that the experience doesn't get in the way of caring for others who are grieving. So, when you prepare for this class, you'll remember that you were asked to do a grief timeline. Let's go back to that work that you did, hopefully. It was part of your pre-class reading on page 268. You'll see focus note J, and hopefully you have that completed, approximately what happened when during the course of your life until now from birth, which was your personal grief timeline. You're going to use some of that information, at least, in an activity or a skill builder activity, to help you to talk about and express the feelings of grief that you had so that we don't let them interfere with our caregiving. One of the first ways to help that, avoid that, is to recognize you have those feelings. So we're going to try to do this in pairs, and usually in our class we're able to do it. And we do an exercise called Share Your Grief History. It could be any kind of loss, but let's try to keep it mostly to human loss. So what you do over the next few minutes is share with your partner your own experiences with grief, drawing from that timeline that you recorded them on. And you don't have to get into every one of them, but the ones that you care to share would be fine. The person who is not sharing should be listening attentively, trying to understand from the grieving person's perspective how they see things. Okay, we take a break at this point, roughly halfway through the session. And returning, the topic now is how to care for each phase of grief. And I'm looking to see, okay, it's on page 274 in your workbook. Over the years, people in the profession have come up with different stages, if you will, for grief, for the grief process. A very popular one was put together by a psychiatrist by the name of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And she came up with 5 stages for grief. She was a psychiatrist, 1926 to 2004, Swiss-American. She wrote the book On Death and Dying in 1969. The 5 stages she saw were denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. Stephen Ministry, a little more streamlined. Shock, recoil, rebuild. Let's take a look at how Stephen Ministry looks at the phases of grief. In the first stage, the shock stage, what's the job of the Stephen Minister? Well, your presence is important. Be present. Need to be there to show that grieving person the care that they need to experience. So we have a ministry of presence in Stephen Ministry, and that is extremely important, especially in this case. How do you deal with the silence? There's some suggestions for that. When people go quiet, if you will, could be for a lot of reasons. Look at Focus Note 5 on page 274. It gives you just a few phrases that you can use. I'm here with you. I'm here and I care. So you don't have to, you know, you give them time. You don't have to say anything too profound. They're lost in their emotions right at that point anyway. But just make sure they know you're with them. Next step, accepting the care receiver. Accept the care receiver. A second way to just how to care for them, well, accept the care receiver where they are. We come alongside our care receivers where they are. So if they're in shock and denial, or they're experiencing the fog of grief or physical symptoms, that's where they are. If all is normal. So accept them if you see them. You see those symptoms, accept them. Your presence and acceptance will definitely help your care receiver adjust to the loss. Another point is listening. You're going to use your listening skills very carefully. Your care receiver may, remember, and this is always the case, your care receiver may have no one else to really listen to them. And that's why Stephen Ministry has been so successful. We are there when others are not. Remember the skills you've learned. Reflecting, Focus Note 6, page 275 in your book. Take a look at it. Validating, Focus Note 7 on page 275. You know, how to handle it, how to use that skill effectively. Step 4, don't challenge denial. It's really important to validate denial. And it sounds like it's the wrong thing to do, but at an early point in the grief process, it's a very right thing to do. Focus Note 8, where is it? On page 276. Yeah, letting the denial be. Read through it, please. It will help you to know how to do that. Expressing your own grief. That's an interesting point. How do you do that? Well, your own expression of grief, maybe you're actually showing some tears, can help the person that you're giving care to see that it's okay to grieve. However, there may be times when the most caring thing you can do is to keep your own emotions and feelings in check. We have to remember that we're the caregiver, and care receivers look to us to be the strong one. So you don't want the care receiver to feel they need to minister to you. For certain, you don't want that. The shock phase can be very confusing and very troubling for a time, at least, for the care receiver. So ministering the ways we talked about will help them to move and progress towards the next stage of grief, which is called, in Stephen Ministry, recoil. Recoil can be a very long, challenging period of adjustment. We're through the shock phase, but now we're going through the adjustment to the reality of life without that person, without the loved one. It can take a year or longer. Your care receiver is going to really benefit from you being there for providing care and support during that whole time. How can you help? Well, there's some ways. Be available. There's a lot of intense emotions going on in this stage. Sudden shifts up and down. One day can be really good. One day can be really bad. The care receiver may be well, seem to be adjusting well to the loss, and then there's other days where the feelings are real intense, and it's like they're taking a couple steps backwards. So you want to reassure that care receiver that the feelings they're experiencing are very normal, and be available to them when they need someone to express those feelings too. Another point, be aware of special dates or events. You want to keep track of some dates on a confidential calendar, of course, and try to be available to your care receiver when those things happen. Some of the things you would naturally know would be like Christmas, you know, Thanksgiving. If you know the birth date of your care receiver's loved one, you know, that might be, of course, appropriate too. Maybe you might send a card or pick up the phone, talk to them a little bit, see how they're doing, or maybe a short note of some type. Look at Focus Note 9, page 277. It gives you a list of the possible different events that happen during the year, and some are more personal than others. And try to be sensitive to those particular events. Encourage emotional expression, another step in the recoil stage. The recoil stage is a time of really powerful emotions, so you want to help your care receiver with those feelings. In Module 2, there are three steps that were expressed as to how we deal with feelings. Recognize them, accept them, express them. Recognize, accept, express. You're going to want to help your care receiver to recognize any difficult feelings when they occur. Talking about feelings isn't easy, so your care receiver might need help to open up. Sometimes, you know, your care receiver might go quiet. The silence can be difficult, but you notice silence with some repressed tears. Take a look at Focus Note 11, 278, and actually, yeah, I'm sorry, 278, Focus Note 11 at the bottom. You haven't said much about all that's happened. I want to let you know that it's okay to cry if you want to. Allowing those tears to be expressed can be very helpful. There are many feelings your care receiver may have during the recoil stage. Sadness, guilt, anger, panic, loneliness. Loneliness is big. Look at Focus Note 12, if you will. It's on page 279. Questions for evoking feelings. These are some really good ones, very effective, and I suggest you kind of commit some to memory so that you can draw from them when the time is appropriate. In class, we read through them, so I would just ask you to do that. There was an example on the bottom of page 279. How one Stephen minister uses a question to draw out feelings. And it's really helpful how that Stephen minister noticed the change in their care receiver when they asked a certain question and the care receiver started to go through the family album, photo album, and it really began to release some things in their minds and hearts. So a very, very good way to help the care receiver draw out their feelings. Whatever the situation, The key thing is to find ways to help the person connect with their feelings through stories, memories, experiences, thoughts of the loved one, and that kind of thing. That's one of the best ways to help your care receiver work through deep feelings, which they're going to have related to grief. And some care receivers need to share the same story over and over again before they finally let go of the pain. So you want to reassure them that you don't mind at all. That's why, in fact, you're there, to care and to listen. Another step, offer distinctively Christian resources. This is something else a Stephen minister can do. Now, we covered distinctively Christian resources in Module 4, prayer, forgiveness, scripture. And we said they're really good resources, but be sensitive and careful as to when you use these tools. You want to be sure that the needs and concerns and comfort level of your care receiver is taken into account. See, for example, remember, we talked about scripture. That can be a wonderful resource used at the right time and situation, but if it's used at the wrong time, and a hurting person, well, at very least, may get nothing out of it, or very little out of it, or they might even be upset. Let's say your care receiver is angry with God for what happened to their loved one. He could have prevented it. You might want to just hold off on suggesting that you pray to God for help through this until the right time presents itself. You always pray for them privately. So listen, just you're going to hear, you'll know when to use these powerful tools. Another thing we can do, guard against platitudes, cliches, and other hurtful expressions. I brought the book, one of the books that Reverend Dr. Haup wrote, Don't Sing Songs to a Heavy Heart, How to Relate to Those Who Are Suffering. And he has a whole chapter on platitudes, and it's titled Words That Hurt, Not Heal. And it's really excellent, and I urge you to kind of consider each one of these. But, for example, I know how you feel. No, you don't. No, you don't. You don't. It may sound sensible, but no one knows exactly how the grieving person feels. And you don't want to dilute the pain they feel by saying, well, you know, I know how this feels. So empathy is best. Another cliche, it's for the best. He's at peace now. Well, you know, she's in a better place. It's good he's not suffering anymore. She's with Jesus now. He's better off. It's a blessing. I mean, on the surface, it looks like maybe that's some of these things make sense. But the problem is, instead of viewing the situation from the suffering person's perspectives, these statements kind of tell them, you know, get over it. They're admonishing him, you. They're not encouraging the Stephen minister to look at the situation from the care receiver's perspective. Keep a stiff upper lip. Well, that's really helpful. some of these are pretty flagrant, but to a woman after a miscarriage, you already have 3 children, you don't have enough bedrooms anyway. Can't even believe that. To someone who just got divorced, go on, have a good time, get over it. To a man who lost his job, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. These cliches are killing you. It's really tough. And then you have the at least types of comments. Well, at least you had 30 years with this person, a spouse, let's say. It really doesn't help. Yeah, be grateful instead of grieving. It hurts. It still hurts. It's the problem with statements like at least statements, they tend to minimize the pain of the suffering person, kind of suggesting it's not as bad as it could be, or other people have experienced worse. You should or shouldn't do different things. Okay, feel different ways. The point's not whether the person should have certain attitudes or take certain actions. The point is that these kinds of words only bring more suffering to the hurting person, so it is better not to say them. Just a couple more. God doesn't give you any more than you can handle. Where did that come from? Nowhere. It's not in the Bible. It doesn't exist. The only thing in the Bible that exists on that topic is, it's not even related to what we're talking about. It's related to temptation, resisting temptation. Let's see. Is there anything else I want to mention? Oh, where in the Bible does it say money is the root of all evil? It doesn't. It says the love of money is the root of all evil. Okay. It's God's will. Dr. Houck says, it took me years to work through my anger towards God and much prayer and personal study to figure out God is there to help us through our issues and that God cries when we cry. Sometimes people, you know, say these things because they want you to get through your pain because they don't have to look at you and they don't have to see your pain. It's self-centered to some degree. When bad things happen, this is how he closes the paragraph. When bad things happen, people don't need platitudes and cliches. They need to be able to lean on each other and support one another. Okay, so be really careful with these kinds of comments. Because it's pretty typical that if a person doesn't know what to say, when people don't know what to say, they're going to say the wrong thing. And it could come across as being very cold and uncaring. Okay, focus note 14 is on page 280. Examples of platitudes, there's a list, take a look at it and add to it. I'm sure you can think of some others that you've heard. So, now what happens? Say you are maybe in a funeral home or at the church, and you hear someone use a cliche with your care receiver. Well, plan to talk to your care receiver about it later. You might not get the time, you know, right then. It might not be appropriate, but later. Actually, sometimes a care receiver might even say a platitude to them themselves to make sense of the loss. So, you know, it's not necessarily an awful thing that they do that. So, if you look at focus note 16, it's on page 281 and 15 also talking about platitude. But 16, inviting a care receiver to examine a platitude, it kind of gives you an idea of how you can approach that topic. Last but not least, mobilize support. You might very well need to get support or additional help for your care receiver at some point in the grieving process. Module 11, we talked about using mental health resources and other community resources. Your care receiver might need various kinds of help, and it could be physical help, practical, social needs, whatever. Even help from a grief support group like GriefShare, and we have that available to your care receiver as well. But whatever the need, the Stephen Minister should help the care receiver find out the support they need and help them to get it, but don't jump in. You're not the person that's going to fill those needs. No. You fill the needs that a Stephen Minister is trained to fill. Remember, too, you consult with your Stephen leader and your supervision group for suggestions when your care receiver needs help and you're not too sure where to turn for them. Last stage of grief, rebuild. Okay, it could take some time. It could start months after the loss, even longer than months after the loss. It could be a year or two. Even at the third stage in grief, the rebuilding stage, people will still continue to receive to feel waves of loneliness and sadness and anger. These feelings are still going to be there, not as intense perhaps, but they'll still be there. And they still would benefit from your support as a Stephen Minister. So this stage involves deepening existing relationships or starting new ones to fill the void left by the loss. It can be pretty challenging. So you have to take a few things into account. Continue your caregiving visits and provide emotional support. Your visits may be less involved, they may be less depth to the discussions, but your care receiver is going to still appreciate your care. Encourage your care receiver with new and renewed social relationships. You know, doing that too early in the grief process can be destructive, but at a later stage, it's healthy. But always, always, baby steps, small, short, what they're comfortable with. Discuss the ways to form new friendships or renew old ones. Maybe discuss the care receiver's hobbies or interests. That, you know, that can open up the door to new relationships. Encourage your care receiver to follow through, however, at their own pace. Always, always at their own pace. Continue paying attention to feelings. Okay, in the rebuilding phase, you are going to continue to pay attention to the feelings of your care receiver throughout that process. Encourage them to express those feelings, always. You might look at Focus Note 17, it's on page 282, as examples of how you can encourage them to express their feelings. So these questions mentioned the lost one by name. Notice that? There's sometimes a reluctance on people's part to mention the name of the deceased loved one, thinking you might hurt the feelings of the care receiver, but you know what? They often really appreciate validating that you know his name or her name and you're willing to share it, and it makes them feel appreciated. So Focus Note 18, how mentioning the lost loved one by name helped. I'd read it carefully. So don't be afraid to use the lost loved one's name. You may very well be the only person that the grieving person has to talk about special memories with that person and very deep emotions. So when you acknowledge their name, it means something. It's good. Okay. Now we have three skill practices that we do in class. We're coming to the close of the session, but these take a little while. Unfortunately, we can't really do them in a remote kind of situation, but what we're doing is practicing a care receiver situation. It's going to be different for the three of these particular skill practices. And we're going to practice with one person being the Stephen minister, one being the care receiver. We practice caring for someone in each stage of grief. So, kind of thumb through this. I give the actual situation. It's not in your book. I give the actual instruction on what the situation is in each case to the Stephen ministers. Okay. So I'm just thumbing through my notes because we can't really do that remotely. Okay. And we're coming down to the last couple things we're going to do in class. What I didn't mention, and it's just a detail, after each role play, we do have some discussion questions as to how the Stephen minister felt doing what their role and how the care receivers felt in terms of how they were treated. So it's all, you know, it's all worked through very carefully in class. Okay. That's the completion of this particular module on caring for people who are grieving. I hope it's been helpful. It's a major topic in Stephen ministry, a major reason why we assign Stephen ministers. So it's important that you have a good handle on it and that you're comfortable working through the grieving process with someone who's going through it. Looking ahead, next module, as I started to say earlier, we'll be on the topic of depression, caring for those with depression, the Stephen minister's role. Module 13. We do have a role in caring for people who are depressed. We're going to talk about what level of depression do we care for and what do we do, you know, if someone exhibits a more severe depression, is developing, those kinds of things that are very, very important. How to recognize what level of depression they're experiencing, too. That's really important. Okay, so I thank you for your attention and your time to read through the material. Oh, one thing I didn't give was the assignment for next week. The pre-class reading is on pages 287. It starts on 287 and it runs through 295. Please make sure that you have that completed. Today for the closing prayer, I chose to do a devotion from Max Lucado, Christian writer, very, very talented, expresses things well. And I thought this particular devotion would be appropriate for today, and then I'm going to close with an excerpt from Scripture, passage from Revelation. He weeps with us. Jesus wept. John 11, 35. Jesus weeps. He sits between Mary and Martha, puts an arm around each, and sobs. He weeps with them. He weeps for them. He weeps with you. He weeps for you. He weeps so we will know mourning is not disbelieving. Flooded eyes don't represent a faithless heart. A person can enter a cemetery, Jesus certain of life after death, and still have a twin tower crater in their heart. Christ did. He wept. He knew. He was 10 minutes from seeing a living Lazarus, and he wept sincerely and painfully. His tears give you permission to shed your own. Grief doesn't mean you don't trust. It simply means you can't stand the thought of another day without the Lazarus of your life. If Jesus gave the love, he understands the tears. So grieve, but not like those who don't know the rest of this story. From the book of Revelation, chapter 21, verses 3 through 7. And I heard a loud voice from the throne say, "Look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death, or mourning, or crying, or pain, for the old order of things has passed away." He who was seated on the throne said, "I'm making everything new." Then he said, "Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true." He said to me, "It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty I will give water without cost from the spring of the water of life. Those who are victorious will inherit all this, and I will be their God, and they will be my children." God bless you. Have a good week.